Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to the Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here's what's making news this week. Erebus CEO Barry Ryan has received a reprimand from Motorsport Australia for the light physical contact he made with Mark Winterbottom at Pukekohe. He was found in breach of rule B6.5.1, which reads, a person must not intentionally make physical contact, which includes any type of assault with another person except in self-defense. We'll have a lot more on that later in the show. In other Erebus news, the team is committed to repairing Will Brown's crashed Commodore before the Bathurst 1000. That means Greg Murphy and Richie Stanaway will be on the Great Race grid in the spare Erebus chassis. The Murphy Stanaway car will share a pit boom with the 888 wildcard driven by Craig Lowndes and Declan Fraser at Bathurst. It was a soggy old weekend at Sandown for the latest instalment of the Speed Series. There were some wild finishes in TCR Australia as the wins went to Aaron Cameron, first-time winner Ben Barguana and Will Brown. Nathan Hearn wrapped up his second Trans Am title with a win and a second place. Owen Kelly won race two, but it wasn't enough to stop Hearn becoming champion. In GT World Challenge Australia, Shane Van Gisbergen and Prince Jeffrey Ibrahim won a shortened opening race before Yasser Shahin and Garth Tander triumphed in the second. Ford has finally pulled the covers off its seventh generation Mustang. The global road car launch included renders of what the supercars version of the Mustang will look like when it hits the track next season and the GT3 car that is due in 2024. With the covers off the new model, Supercars is free to get the final round of VCAT Aero testing underway, which is set to happen at some point in November. A Gen 3 prototype with the updated bodywork will be publicly unveiled at the Bathurst 1000 early next month. Ford also confirmed that it has established what is effectively a motorsport department here in Australia that will cover supercars and any potential GT programs in the future. The field is set for the 2022 Bathurst 1000 after Brad Jones Racing locked in Jackson Evans to partner Jack Smith. And a number of technical innovations will be trialled at today's S5000 open test at the Bend, including a push-to-pass system and some new Hoosier tyre compounds. Joining me this week to discuss all that and more is a teammate that I hear qualifies for a Formula One super license based on his Project Cars 2 results alone, Stefan Bartholomaeus. Stefan, how are you this week?
Hello, Andrew. I think we've wasted too much time driving the Indy cars on Project Cars to get a super license. We might be out of luck there.
Good point. Good point. Well, look, you know I love a good whinge about a super license system, Stefan. It's one of my favourite topics. So we are definitely going to crack into that later in the show. But I think we need to kick things off with the news that broke just as we were about to hit record this morning. Of course, I'm talking about Barry Ryan being reprimanded by Motorsport Australia for some argy-bargy in the pits with Mark Winterbottom in New Zealand. Now, Motorsport Australia looked into the incident between Barry and Frosty, where Barry was seen twice pushing Frosty as he tried to get him out of the Erebus garage following that big crash for Will Brown, which was, of course, instigated by contact from Winterbottom. The stewards decided that there was a breach of rule B6.5.1, which reads a person must not intentionally make physical contact, which includes any type of assault with another person except in self-defense. However, the stewards' findings did also outline that Frosty didn't feel intimidated by the contact. It seems that Ryan received the reprimand based mostly on the second push, which was slightly more aggressive than the first. There's a reference to Frosty being put off balance by that push. Sort of blanket question first, Stefan. What are your general thoughts on all this?
I think it's the right outcome, to be honest. They needed to draw a line without losing sight of the context. Clearly, it was hugely emotive because it was on TV and it was Barry Ryan, who's a very polarizing figure, especially with the fan base. But it was hardly assault or an act worthy of a big punishment. But from that officialdom standpoint, they can't be seen to be condoning that sort of thing. And as soon as it was referred to the stewards, it appeared there would be some sort of reprimand because doing nothing from there would have set an uncomfortable precedent.
I just don't think I agree. I don't think even a reprimand is warranted, to be honest, for what we saw. Like, I don't think it should have been looked into. I don't think it really needed that. I kind of fundamentally understand what you're saying about there needs to be a line in the sand, but I think it can be a fair way away from what we actually saw. I mean, he didn't clock the bloke. And like, if what we saw isn't on, I mean, is Supercars going to ban footage of Murph prodding and poking Ambrose at the cutting during its Bathurst coverage next week? Because my guess is that we're going to see that footage over and over and over and over again because it's awesome and it's the edge that our sport needs. And of course, I don't condone any violence, but Frosty didn't look all that distressed by the contact. He didn't leave the garage. You know, he stayed there. He obviously didn't feel threatened. The report says as much. I really think the fact it was even looked at is complete nonsense. We should be celebrating these rivalries. Worst stuff happens on a footy field week in, week out, and that's not a bad thing. We need passion. We need these guys to care about what they are doing, because if they don't care about it, how can we expect the fans to care? So yes, violence is bad, but I don't think this was violent. I think it was well within what we should see as an acceptable interaction between two sporting rivals.
I think there can be a difference between what the TV director wants to replay or what you like to write about and what the judiciary deems acceptable conduct. Because if they wave this away, they're actually condoning it. And it's very different to, say, the classic Murphy-Ambrose confrontation. I think a team boss is held to a different level of account in the garage post-race than what drivers are when they're standing on the side of the mountain. But at the end of the day, it's a Clayton's penalty, isn't it? Like, it's not even a suspended penalty that could turn into something more later. It's just a reprimand.
No, exactly. Exactly. No, but that's what I'm kind of saying. So what has this achieved over doing nothing about it? What's it done?
Well, they're saying that's not acceptable conduct.
Okay. But this exact same thing could happen between another team boss and driver or two drivers or whatever tomorrow and still nothing would happen. So what has it achieved? I mean, I just don't get, if it wasn't bad enough to actually be deemed something punishable with a real punishment, then play on. It was great. Some guys went at it. You know, they were angry. They were passionate. They cared about the outcome of something that happened. It's so important for our sport. We don't see anywhere near enough of it. So the fact that we had this intervention at all, I personally just think is unnecessary.
It's interesting that that explanation included a mention that Barry had texted the Team 18 rep and said, tell Frosty not to come down. And that Frosty then said he wouldn't have come down if he'd actually received that message. So we've all had moments when we've like looked at our phone too late and gone, oh, I wish I'd seen that earlier. But that was a classic case.
Yeah. And it was, and this is also referenced in the report. I mean, Will Brown had been on television several minutes earlier saying he better get down here and apologise. So, I mean, there was a lot of conflicting information going on there as well, because Will Brown saying, you know, I want this guy to come down here and tell me he's sorry. And Barry Ryan's texting Team 18 saying this bloke better not show his face down here or he's going to get pushed. I'm not sure that's exactly what it said, but but yeah, anyway, so it was obviously, I think if you count all that in, like, I guess the outcome is the right outcome, because him being punished for it would have absolutely been the wrong outcome. But I also think that, you know, we need to be able to see that. I just, as I said before, I feel that's well within the realms of an acceptable interaction between sporting rivals, whether it's a team boss or whatever. It was so far off being something that was actually a bad look for the sport, in my opinion.
But it is team boss on player. And I think if you transpose that to other sports, if an AFL coach came out at three-quarter time and gave another player a bit of a shove, I reckon you'd see some sort of reprimand for that.
I think you'd see a pretty big brawl on the field. And that would also get played over and over and be on the 6 o'clock news.
And you'd love nothing more than that.
Well, I just think that like that it would it wouldn't sort of, yeah, I don't know. This stuff is good for our sport. Rivalries are good for our sport. We should like the fact that people take it seriously and get upset when it doesn't go their way. This is what sport is all about. That's what makes it such a great thing.
As Will Brown would say on Facebook, let's move on.
Yeah, okay. That's a very good idea. Okay, well, we finally know what the new Ford Mustang looks like, Stefan. Ford underwent the global launch of the S650 or seventh generation Mustang late last week. Now, the launch included a few more details on the motor racing program for the new Mustang, including renders of both the supercar and the GT3 car. The new Mustang will race in a number of series around the world, obviously including supercars from next season onwards, and in GT3 and GT4 and NASCAR from 2024. It will also be used in the NHRA. Stefan, let's start close to home with the supercar. I think it looks good. It looks like a better match to the Camaro in terms of that really modern styling. To me, it looks a little bit better than the Gen 3 Mustang that we've already seen. And of course, it looks approximately 1 million times better than the Gen 2 Mustang, which is not all that difficult. Stefan, your thoughts on the look of the new car?
Yeah, there was a lot to take in all at once with that launch in terms of a new road car and then that computer-generated video and stills of all those different race cars blazing around.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see it all together because with this move to Mustang versus Camaro with Gen 3, there is that risk that supercars just blends into being a GT category, just looking like it's lost its DNA, which I know you spoke about when the Gen 3 cars first got rolled out. But the Mustang supercar and the GT3 car don't actually look much alike at all, do they?
No.
From what we've seen so far, the supercar actually sits nicely between that really aggressive GT3 and that GT4 car, which probably is too far down the production look for supercars. So I think the supercar is a nice blend between having that production styling without actually going too far.
Yeah, no, I think that's a I think that's a very good point. No, look, I think the car looks quite good. Obviously, it is just a computer generated image. It's not the exact. We can't say it's the exact look of the car because they still have to undergo the homologation testing, the VCAT process for the aero, which will be November now, which is definitely pushing it pretty late because supercars did want to do that testing this month. That was always the plan, but the plan was always dependent on the global unveiling of that Mustang because Ford made it pretty clear to supercars that they weren't going to take the risk of dressing a car up in panels and sending it out to an airfield somewhere and just hoping no one whips out their phone and takes a quick photo of it and it gets leaked. So it'll be November for the VCAT testing. The Mustang looks quite different to what the current S550 car does. So I'm guessing that it will be a decent job to prioritize. They did a soft VCAT, but it is going to have to be a fairly extensive VCAT process again, I think, to get that right. But that'll happen in November after the Gold Coast 500. And then teams can spend the off-season strapping panels on cars and we can go racing next March. There was some interesting stuff to come out of the launch, as you mentioned, Stefan, and the subsequent media briefings with Ford Performance boss Mark Rushbrook. One was there will be a motorsport department established here in Australia for this new era of Mustang racing and Ford Performance racing. It will consist of Justin Cappuciano, Brendan McGinniskin, and Ben Nightingale. Now, Justin's role is Ford Performance Motorsport and Special Vehicle Engineering. Brendan's role is Ford Performance Motorsport Engineering Lead Australia, and Ben will head up the communications, marketing, and commercial for motorsport. He's well known to the industry from his time working for supercars and then for Dick Johnson Racing. The idea is basically trackside support for teams at supercars events, and in the future to be involved in any customer GT3 or GT4 programs that might pop up once those cars are on the market. Stefan, can we take this as a sign that Ford really is taking this Mustang program seriously?
Yeah, it's a clear sign of that for sure, because pretty much all of their involvement on the engineering side has been unseen. Like, it's all done in the USA. They've sent Ford Performance reps to those VCAT aero tests from the US in the past, so having boots on the ground full time will clearly help with that side of it. Be interesting to see what role they actually do play though once the car is homologated, because the teams are very much individual engineering enterprises in their own right, as you know. But I'm sure they've got a plan around all that, and no doubt, as you suggest, they've got customer GT3 and GT4 programs very much in mind here.
That GT3 car does look pretty cool, as you flagged before. Now, Mark Rushbrook did tell me last week that he would definitely like to see that car racing at the Bathurst 12 hour in the future. I mean, I'm guessing you'd probably like to see that too, Stephen.
Oh, absolutely. And it was a shame that with the whole Ford GT program that Ganassi was doing that was at Le Mans and all of that, like there was no GT3 version for all those years. It sort of seemed like a tease that they were in GT racing, but they could never come to the 12 hour. So that obviously changes now. And Mark Rushbrook did say, like, it's not just a must-do race for them, it's a must-win race. So
yeah,
that kind of hints at some kind of factory-assisted program, and I'm sure there'll be some supercars drivers with their hands up for that, and also some international GT guys that are part of the Ford program you would think would come down.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
There were some interesting comments from Mark Rushbrook on electrification and hybridisation in supercars and beyond. I'll just quickly play the audio. Here's what he had to say.
Our position on that, this has actually changed. We were, I think, we were definitely two or three years ago pushing for electrification, including hybrid, in a lot of different series around the world. We're not, honestly, at this point. I know we have it with our Puma hybrid in WRC, and it's actually working quite well there, and we've learned a lot from that that we can transfer to our road cars. But in series, including supercars and including NASCAR and some of the sports car racing series that we're in, we do believe that ICE will continue to work very well for us for the foreseeable future, because it does create that spectacle. It does create that emotional, passionate connection to the vehicle, which helps our brand. And at this point, with some of the cost and complexity of hybrid, it's not adding. If it's not going to add to the race, then we don't think it needs to be on there. So at this point, for supercars or many of our other global series, we're not advocating to add it.
Now, that's an interesting take and kind of goes against this broad push to bring those greener technologies into motor racing. I mean, for me, it's actually a nice thing to hear. And to be honest, you know, we've seen with Formula One how even a hybrid powertrain can severely affect the look and feel of a racing series. The visceral experience that we so often hear about is so important to this sport. The funny thing with supercars is that with the E85 fuel, it is actually relatively environmentally friendly anyway, and we don't hear all that much about it. But, I mean, that stuff is mostly molasses. So the series actually kind of does its bit for the environment already. And, you know, I'm not anti-hybrid technology. I'm as environmentally sensitive as the next person, but I don't think rushing a hybrid program into supercars would actually add to what the category, to its credit, already does.
Yeah, I mean, when I hear those comments, I think it's hugely significant for supercars that Ford is still keen to promote internal combustion and is willing to back categories that are entertainment over technology. The need to be greener is still a looming cloud there for supercars, no doubt. Like when you're dealing with governments and the greater business sector, it'll need to be addressed more eventually. But the ones who will drive direct change in this space are the car manufacturers. And supercars would have been in a really difficult spot if Ford had insisted on hybrid for Gen 3. I mean, when you look at Gen 3 being over budget and over complicated as it is, imagine what a hybrid version of this thing would have looked like. On the Chevy side, they're obviously less invested, but it'll be interesting to sort of track their stance on all this going forward as well. Like there's a lot of stories around at the moment suggesting that the Camaro nameplate could soon be rebooted as a four-door electric car, which would be quite a shift for the Camaro brand.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, Chevy's sort of involved in this Garage 56 NASCAR thing, which will be hybrid powered as well. So there is some movement in that space, but yeah. Very, very interesting. Well, the Bathurst 1000 grid is finally set, Stefan, with BJR pouncing on Jackson Evans after his evaluation test at Winton yesterday. I mean, we touched on this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the fact he was going to do this test, but, I mean, what a last-minute addition to the field this bloke is.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how Jackson goes. It's a big shift for him going from Porsches to the supercar, which he hasn't raced before, but there won't be too much pressure, I suppose, being in the car that he is. The rookie stories I always think are a great part of Bathurst, and last year we nearly didn't have any rookies until Tickford subbed Zach Best in for Alex Premer, and Zach ended up doing a great job. So this year we're back up to 7 rookies, which coincidentally is the same number as we had in 2020, and it's a great roll call of young talent on that list of rookies when you line up Matt Payne, Cameron Hill, Aaron Seaton, Declan Fraser, Matt Charter and Jay Robotham. It's a great opportunity for a lot of young guys to show their stuff on the big stage.
Absolutely. And what's really good news is that we looks like we will have all 28 cars on the Bathurst grid, as it looks like Erebus is going to repair Will Brown's car. That means, as Murph predicted to us on the pod last week, that he and Richie Stanaway will be there, which is great. Let's have a chat about the Sandown Speed Series round, Stefan. I have to say I was feeling pretty smug sitting in a warm and sunny Wanneroo Raceway while watching on over the weekend. There are wet race meetings and then there was that. Some of the footage of cars going off and splashing through the puddles was amazing, to be honest. We're at the business end of the TCR season and, boy, it really looks like Tony D'Alberto is putting together a title-winning season. No wins on the weekend, but just consistently up there, even when he was behind Jordan Cox, minimising the points damage. Do you reckon he's got it from here, Stefan?
He's certainly in the box seat. Like, he's got a healthy gap back to Jordan Cox now with one round to go. But that could actually change very slightly this week because the results for that final Sandown race are still preliminary, while a couple of incidents are being looked at, including the one with Tony and Bailey Sweeney in that last race. So I think Tony was largely the victim in that. Like, Sweeney gave him a couple of hits through turn one, but you know, the Hyundai ultimately got fired off the road. So we'll have to see what they end up making of that. But I've got to say from the weekend, like, I love the way the Stan TV team were doing post-race interviews and teeing up the footage of incidents to play for the drivers to talk to. Like, there's nothing worse than in those interview situations when the driver says, oh, I haven't seen the incident. Oh, mm-hmm. I don't really want to comment. Like, actually getting their live reactions when they haven't seen it before is fantastic, especially when it's the likes of Jay Hansen and James Moffat involved.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was that's always interesting to watch. And you know, we've said it before, the TV product for all that stuff is actually fantastic. It's just a shame that perhaps not that many people are watching it with where it's running. Well, it was a thrilling conclusion to the Trans Am season, Stefan, as Nathan Hearn claimed the title over Gary Rogers' motorsport teammate Owen Kelly. I know you're a big Trans Am man, so you would have been watching on closely for this. I actually grabbed Nathan for a chat about his season and his future yesterday, and here it is. Yeah, congratulations on winning a second Trans Am title over the weekend. Pretty tough conditions to do it in as well. I'm sure you would have preferred more straightforward weather to deal with across the title deciding weekend. It looked pretty wild there at Sandown.
Yeah, it was not a grouse weekend. It was sort of one of those weekends you want to, I don't know, be a spectator rather than a driver.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, it was good to sort of get it done, I guess, in different circumstances. I think in race, well, before race two, which was race one for the weekend, I was bloody nervous for the start. And then we, you know, everyone had to start for pit lane. So I think that took a lot of pressure off because, yeah, I was more or less worried just about turn one and turn two and what was going to happen to there and making sure I wasn't going to get torpedoed from behind. But, yeah, so, yeah, it was good in some regards, but, yeah, much more, well, would have much rather be dry for the whole weekend. But, yeah, in the end, it all worked out, and yeah, I'm happy that we managed to get it all wrapped up.
Those cars look like a handful in the dry. They must be like really difficult to drive in the wet.
Yeah, so the Hoosier wets just do not disperse water. The water sort of channels into different grooves, but it doesn't go sideways out the tyre like most wets do. So as soon as you hit standing water in one of our cars, you're aquaplaning. So it doesn't matter how much standing water there is, just aquaplanes. So you have, you know, going down straight, your left front will aquaplane and your right front will aquaplane. And then, yeah, you're just sort of getting pulled every different direction. So even going down a straight is probably the hairiest part, especially around the back because it's so quick and there's a lot of standing water at Sandown. So, yeah, it was different. But, I mean, everyone was in the same boat, I guess you could say. And yeah, you just had to keep it on the black stuff and yeah, just play it safe.
There's been a bit of talk about a bit of tension in the GRM garage between yourself and Owen Kelly. I mean, has that been the case? And regardless of that, you know, is it satisfying to win this title against someone who kind of has the track record that he has?
Yeah, look, I mean, at certain points, I mean, when you're 1-2 in a championship and the same team, you're always going to butt heads, I guess. And yeah, we did butt heads a couple of times, but towards the end of the year, I think we sort of just mellowed out and respect each other for what we've done for the year and sort of work together as a team. And yeah, it's good to, I think the last round was probably the closest we've been since we met each other. So that's a bit of a positive, but yeah, look, I mean, and Owen, he stepped up in the last round, you know, for the rest of the year, you know, I felt like I always had the wood over him, but yeah, in that last round I was driving 10 tenths trying to keep in front of him. So yeah, he definitely stepped up for the last round and you can tell he's had a few standout 500s under his belt. So as soon as it started raining, he knew exactly where to go. So yeah, I mean, it was good to race against, a bloke of his experience in motorsport. It's not like AFL or anything. You know, when you get older, you don't really lose too much time. You sort of just get more experience. So, yeah, it was cool to tick it off. And, now coming to Bathurst with a fresh mind and, yeah, see what happens.
You've been in the series for a while. It must be nice seeing this kind of incredible trajectory that Trans Am is on at the moment. I mean, it really is becoming more and more popular at state level and at that national series level. It must just be a nice thing to see as someone who's been involved for so long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, we bought car number 16 when it came into the country and now they're over 70. So yeah, it's been cool to grow with category, I guess. We got to a crossroad out of Formula Ford where I couldn't go to Super 2 because it's too much money and couldn't do Formula Ford again because there really wasn't any point for me to do it again. So yeah, we just sort of had to take a leap and hope for the best with the tier two and what it was tier two. And yeah, we finally managed to, well now it's time to get some momentum behind it. And yeah, Sirius is going leaps and bounds forward. So yeah, looking forward to next year. I reckon it'll be a bigger year, 30 plus cars most rounds, I reckon. And yeah, I mean, Bathurst is going to be a real scene setter for next year and get a few cars who wanted to take the punt this year, but didn't want to jump in midway to a championship. So yeah, we'll see what Bathurst brings and, yeah, it should set up a rough indicator of what's going to happen for next year.
So are you going to be there next year? I mean, two Trans Am titles down, you know, that is the question, what the plan is from here. You talked about the cost of Super 2 and all that sort of stuff. What's your sort of medium to long-term plan at the moment?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm pretty happy with GRM, obviously. You know, they've given me a lifeline with racing. You know, 2020, I was sort of at that another crossroad, I guess, where you sort of think, oh, well, do I keep racing Bitchman and forking out all this money or do I go race Speedway and I can race for longer? So we got to that crossroad, then obviously got with GRM and they came into Trans Am. And yeah, look, I mean, it was only our first year with them. And yes, I've been in Trans Am for a long time, but yeah, I think for next year, it's much the same. I'm going to be doing Trans Am and try and do as much as 5,000 as I can. Just keep seat time. But for me to move forward, I don't really have the budget to go to Super 2. So either need to fall over the winning lotto ticket or I need to get to SVG type driver into Trans Am and really compare myself to the, I don't know, to the big names, I guess, and just see. You know, I think it's come far enough along that it's definitely respected as a pathway. And yeah, I'm just sort of the, I wouldn't say unlucky one, but the one that has to sort of break the water for everyone else to sort of, you know, show that this pathway can be done. But yeah, look, I mean, with Gary and Barry on my side, I reckon we'll be pretty right. So yeah, we'll just see what next year brings and then just take from there, I guess, on what happens after that.
So you would like to be someone who can forge this sort of new path to supercars through Trans Am? I mean, it makes sense. It's a V8 powered tin top that's difficult to drive. It is actually a pretty good way to learn how to drive a supercar. Is that still your long-term ambition to end up in supercars?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, I've sort of given up on normal life. I've moved to Melbourne, moved away from all family and all my mates from back in Lismore and yeah, just started fresh really. And for me, you know, I don't want to sort of go back to Lismore until I sort of have a career where, you know, I drive cars, I can live off driving cars. So that's sort of my goal for short to medium term. And then obviously long term, we'll see what happens. But yeah, wherever that be, you know, might even just be in Trans Am, you know, Trans Am's getting more and more commercial interest as we go on. So Yeah, if I could make a living driving Trans Am, I don't see any reason I need to move up any further. But yeah, I mean, supercars right now, it's got the most sponsorship dollars in Australia, and it's really probably somewhere I can sort of see myself going, especially with Gen 3. You know, the car's going more and more like Trans Ams, and yeah. Holdsworth and a lot of drivers have said that the supercars are just basically a Trans Am car with radial tyres. So yeah, I think it's probably a realistic goal to aim for, but yeah, we just got to sort out all the stuff behind the scenes and try and get it all done. But yeah, I'm pretty confident that should hopefully be happening sometime soon.
I mean, we saw Brody Kostecki have a run in a Trans Am car. There was obviously the whole Shane Van Gisbergen saga, and he was going to, and then he wasn't going to. So you would welcome more of those guys coming in. You'd like to have that benchmark to be able to say to, you know, to showcase to everyone watching that you are at that level, or you are working towards getting to that level.
Yeah, I mean, 100%, because at the end of the day, you know, all these supercar drivers are probably the most race fit, and they are the best drivers in the country. But, you know, being in Trans Am, we do know the cars inside out, and you know, we haven't got any, I mean, the talent at the front of the field is as deep as any other category there is. And, you know, it showed at QR when we had Brody come in, and he was at the front, which is what you'd expect him to be, and but, you know, he didn't sweep the floor with us, you know, so it'd be good to have a lot more supercar guys come in, just as a reference for the crowd. You know, I think I know within myself sort of where I do sit. But yeah, for other people looking from the outside looking in, yeah, it'd be good to get reference of, you know, some big names. You know, if we had an SVG come in, you know, it'd definitely be very interesting to see where we sat. But yeah, look, yeah, we'll see what happens in the future, and hopefully that cross platform, I guess, can be something. But yeah, we'll just wait and see. Whilst, it's not up to me to decide, so I'm just going to keep steering the thing. And if other blokes want to come in and have a go, and yeah, I'll be more than happy to have some big names come in and benchmark myself against them.
Stefan, I do hope this bloke finds his way into the supercar system, because, you know, we've mentioned it before, and we'll talk more about super license nonsense very soon. But if a talent like that can't find his way in, the system needs changing.
Well, going by that chat, I get the feeling Nathan was more disappointed than anyone when Shane Van Gisbergen was blocked from racing Trans Am at QR.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. No, I think he's pretty keen to match himself up against the absolute best. No doubt about that. All right, let's take a look at what's happening around the world. Annea Bastianini won a spellbinding Aragon Grand Prix ahead of Francesco Bagnaia and Aleix Espargaró. Jack Miller was 5th and Remy Gardner 16th, while a crash between Fabio Quartararo and Marc Marquez blew the title fight wide open. Espargaró now just 17 points behind the Frenchman. Chris Buescher held off Chase Elliott to win the NASCAR Cup Series race in Bristol, ending a 222-race winless streak. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick were eliminated from the title race. And Colton Herta's Formula One dream is over, at least for the time being. Red Bull has abandoned efforts to sort out a super license for the American so that he could join AlphaTauri. He only had 32 of the 40 points required for a license, despite being a 7-time IndyCar race winner. Nick De Vries is now being linked with an AlphaTauri deal, as well as interest from Alpine and Williams for next season. All of that depends on whether Red Bull releases Pierre Gasly to go to Alpine. Stefan, you know I love a good super license tear up, whether at home or abroad. I mean, how does this bloke even need an exemption? Like, I can fundamentally understand not giving someone an exemption, but he shouldn't need one. How would he be a danger to other drivers? I mean, this is a complete joke, right?
Yeah, it's a massive own goal for F1. You know, when you consider the benefits that having an American driver like Colton would bring, but also just the excitement of seeing how he'd go. So I think the FIA needs to admit they've got this wrong. The waiting for IndyCar isn't right, and they need to fix that going forward. But to be honest, I'm torn on whether he should get an exemption, because that does open the door to political influence and arguments on a range of drivers going forward. I find it interesting too that there are a few avenues where Herta could have gained a few extra points, be it FP1 outings or even competing in a series like TRS down in New Zealand over our summer, that aren't being pursued all that heavily. So it's been a little bit last minute Larry from Red Bull, I reckon. And it's all come on that, like the knock on from the Alonso and Piastri sagas, really.
Yeah, for sure. But like, and I totally agree with you that, yeah, handing out exemptions is a dangerous precedent to set. It's the fact that he needs one in the first place. That's the issue. You know, he even came out and said, "Yeah, I'm not looking for special treatment, but why on earth do I not qualify given what I've already achieved?" And I can kind of understand that, like, a bloke who's won a bunch of IndyCar races and is about to step into a Formula One seat doesn't necessarily want to come down and do TRS against a bunch of kids. Like, I sort of get that. As cool as it would be, and maybe the attitude should be, well, it's a race car, just go down there and race it. But I can sort of understand how that wouldn't be overly attractive. But, yeah, I just think it's another example of these systems completely failing talent.
It is a bit of a perfect storm of IndyCar not being weighted correctly, but then his results have been a little bit unfortunate as well. Like, for him to be ninth, I believe it was, in the 2022 standings. If he'd been high, a fair bit higher than that, this wouldn't actually be a drama.
Okay, Castrol mailbag time. Now, Declan Lynch asks, why main game drivers don't do Super 2 on race weekends for extra seat time and mileage, similar to how NASCAR drivers often race in Cup and Xfinity? It's an excellent question, Declan, and we sometimes actually see the opposite thing happening. For example, Jay Robotham has decided not to do Super 2 at Bathurst so we can focus on his great race duties with Matt Charter. Stefan, would double duties even be allowed under our current supercars rules?
No, it's explicitly prohibited that you're not allowed to run both series on a sprint weekend. And we have seen that enforced before. Like, I do remember Jack Perkins was subbing for LDM in the main game at the back end of 2017, but he couldn't do Newcastle, which was the final round, because he was committed to his Super 2 program. You do reference that we see a bit of double duties at Bathurst, but it always goes the other way. And anyone who wants to do Super 2 for the Bathurst round has to have done three other Super 2 rounds earlier that season. And, I mean, the overall context too, while we're talking rules, is that the top 14 from the previous year's Supercars Championship are ineligible for Super 2 the following season, even if they lose their full-time ride. So there's a clear policy there of not wanting main game stars coming down a tier and taking seats and sponsorship away from the young kids coming through. So it's an interesting one. I mean, it's a great question. What do you make of this? Is it the right policy to have this in place?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one to answer. Like, in a way, you know, if guys were stepping back to get that seat time, what a great way for kids in Super 2 to benchmark themselves against the main game drivers. But in another way, would it ever actually be a fair fight? Because Super 2 is notorious for its lack of miles. I mean, that's why guys opt to do wildcard programs instead of Super 2. So having main game drivers dropping back, they're always just going to come in more race fit and be pretty hard to beat. And if the main game guys are toweling up the Super 2 kids, a case for promotion can be harder to make. Probably the other factor to think about moving forward is the fact that the hardware is actually going to be quite different from now on, when you've got Gen 2 cars in Super 2 and Gen 3 cars in the main game. But yeah, it's kind of a tricky one and a very good question. To be perfectly honest, I'm not entirely sure if it's a good idea or not. Be cool to see, though.
Yeah, no doubt. Even if they just let main game drivers do one Super 2 round each year, it'd definitely be a fun storyline and something to follow. It'd probably lift the profile of Super 2. But, there's a few reasons there why it's probably not great. And personally, I just think there needs to be more effort into helping people go the other way and be able to Super 2 drivers do more wildcards, which we've talked about, the fact that Supercars is trying to rein that in. So, if there's more crossover, I'd definitely like to see it as people going up rather than people going down.
Absolutely. All righty, let's hand out some Castrol Stars of the Week. Stefan, who's getting your star this week?
Well, I'm going with Ben Barguana, who rebounded from a crash in practice one at Sandown to score his maiden TCR race win on Sunday, as you mentioned in the headlines at the top. But for those who didn't see it, he was trailing Jordan Cox into the last two corners of that race, and they both speared off as a downpour hit, and Benny scrambled back on first. So there was a bit of confusion as to whether he'd actually keep the win. But once it was confirmed, his excitement was just fantastic to see. And he even gave it a bit of how good's this in his TV interview, channeling his old man, which, as you know, I absolutely love that stuff. So well done to him.
I'm going to crack my star into quarters and split it between Toby Price, Paul Wheel, Dale Moskett and Preston Schmid. They finished fifth outright and won the Extreme two-wheel drive class at the Baja 400 over the weekend in their Team Australia trophy truck. So that's a pretty handy outing as they look to go for a bit of Baja 1000 glory later in the year.
A quarter of a star of the week each. They'll be stoked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's it will definitely be a great honour for, you know, a two-time Dakar winner like Toby Price. I'm sure this will go straight to the top of his trophy cabinet. Before we go, if any of you fine listeners are heading to the Bathurst 1000 in a couple of weeks, please get in touch and let us know. Stefan and I are planning a little listener catch-up, more than likely at one of Bathurst's fine watering holes at some point over that weekend. We'll have more details soon. But if you enjoy a cold beverage and talking about racing cars, it will probably be worth checking out. Well, that's it for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, and review our work wherever you listen to your podcast. And we'll be back next week with more Castrol Motorsport news.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services. And you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and or a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.